New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. What is forgiveness? Webster's Dictionary says it's when you give up resentment, the desire to punish, or simply stop being angry with someone or something. But we all know through personal experience there's more to it than that. For instance, we often hear the old phrase, forgive and forget, but is that possible or even necessary? While many would argue the benefits of forgiveness for our own emotional health, is it always in every case of virtue, or can it sometimes be counterproductive or a sign of weakness? And can you forgive in a way that's less than 100%? Can you partly forgive someone, or is that not really forgiveness? It's today, inspired by the Crystal of the Book Socrates Cafe. Each month, we ponder a different question, both on the air and online. This month, it's what is forgiveness? Let's hear from you this hour. Comment at 1-800-892-6477 or send us a short email. exchange@hpr.org is the address. I also want to remind you that this discussion has already been taking place online for a few weeks now at our Socrates Exchange page. We'll share some of those postings with you this hour and invite you to continue posting. Again, look for the Socrates Exchange page at nhpr.org. Joining me in studio is Nick Smith. He's an associate professor of philosophy at UNH, advisor to UNH's Socratic Society, and project advisor to the Socrates Exchange. And Nick, welcome back. It's really nice to see you.
Myra.
Well, we haven't done one of these programs in a little while, Nick, so just remind us how it works.
Well, instead of me being the expert philosophy professor, it's going to be more color calling and us discussing and sort of getting into what we all think and trying to work towards an understanding together. So instead of, you know, you asking a question of me and I giving you some sort of some pontification of what I think, I'm going to ask you all some more questions to get us all thinking together about this very, very complicated and interesting topic.
So it's asking questions and more questions and more questions.
The questions are around.
And what's the ultimate goal?
To get a richer understanding of the idea and sort of having the discussion itself. Oftentimes with philosophical topics, there's a tendency to think what you think, close the book, and that's it. And with most interesting philosophical issues, if you're really certain about what you think, you're probably absolutely wrong. And so people who are most certain are often the most worrisome. And the Socratic method is really good at allowing people to take the next few steps in their thinking. It can be challenging, it can be uncomfortable, it can also be really, really exciting and invigorating, and it can sort of refresh your way of thinking about a topic you might not have thought about for a long time.
And forcing you to sort of unravel the way that you think through, again, this method of asking questions. That's right. And what's your role, Nick, as moderator?
My role is to ask the questions, and I'm not the expert. I'm just trying to think with you all about these topics.
All right. Well, let's get our listeners involved. Again, the exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Nick Smith is here, and it's the Socrates Exchange today. We're pondering one question this hour. It is, what is forgiveness? 1-800-892-6477 is the number. We go now to J. Allen McKay in Manchester. Now, J. Allen contacted us through our Public Insight Network, and Jay, thanks a lot in the morning.
Good morning, you're welcome.
Well, how do you answer this question, Jay Allen? What is forgiveness?
Well, it's a difficult choice, but it's a choice to release others, release yourself, really, from the frustrations and agony of what others have done to you. And it's something that I found from the more I've done it in that respect, it's a freeing experience that allows you to really look at the person that offended you in a way that you can actually bless them.
So it's a release for both parties?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, get the crack on Jay Allen.
Jay Allen, that's a great definition. Can I just ask you, when you say you describe forgiving as a choice, is it really always that easy that you can sort of flip the switch and choose to forgive someone? Have you had any experiences like this where you can just sort of say, today I forgive you, and then you no longer feel sort of emotional pain or nagging memories?
No, the emotional pain still remains oftentimes. But it is a choice that, from my own personal experience, I couldn't forgive other people very easily until I was receiving forgiveness from someone else for some mistake, be it big or small, that I had done, in some cases really big mistakes. And for them not to hold it against me, to not drag it out and put it in my face the next time I saw them or the next time I made maybe the same mistake again, was a very liberating and joyful experience that it moved me to making the choice when I was on the other end of having been offended by someone else or hurt or whatever the situation was. So it's not an easy choice, but it comes down to when we're offended, we have the choice of either holding anger at them and getting even or just letting it go and letting God take care of things.
Good, Jay. If I can follow up and ask again, there's been this research lately in the medical community that actually says that forgiving is good for your cardiovascular health, which is very interesting. It's actually, people are understanding forgiveness as primarily good for themselves, good for the person forgiving rather than the person who's forgiven. How do you take that? Do you think when you forgive someone, it's more about your release, or is it more about sort of something that you owe to them, or you're trying to have some kind of communion with them? Is it more for you or for them?
It's for both, but primarily it's for you. Because even when if you hold resentment and you get a chance of getting even at them in some way, you still, the next time you see them, want to get even with them again. And it continues the cycle of retribution. They get even at you for getting even at them, and so on and so forth. And there's a story that Jesus tells us in terms of forgiving Peter, the top disciple, as many people look at him, ask Jesus, how many times should I forgive a guy when he sinned against me? 7 times? You think Jesus is trying to be generous? 7 times? And Jesus responds, no, 70 times 7, much more than you think. And then he goes on and tells the story about a master and a servant. And the servant owes him, it says, 100,000 talents, which equates to like 200,000 years of this guy's wages. So there's no possible way for this guy to repay him, and the master's going to throw him in jail because he can't repay him because he needs to repay him right then and there. And the guy begs, master begs him, and he decides to have mercy on him and pity him and releases him from the debt. Well, the servant goes off, and he happens to run into another servant who owes him 100 denarii, which translates to only 100 days' wages. And 100 days' wages versus 200,000 years' wages, very insignificant. But the first servant, who was just forgiven his debt, slaps this guy and puts him in jail for the $100 that he was supposed to get from him.
So he hasn't learned the true nature of forgiveness, has he,
Jay Allen? No, he hasn't. And then, if I can just quickly finish that.
Please, yes.
The master gets word of this from other people. He brings the first servant back. He charges him with the insensitivity that he showed and puts him in jail. And there's the Greek word for the jailers, when he's handed over to the jailers, the Greek word for jailers is torturers.
Jay Allen, I'm going to wrap you up here because there's some other people who want to join our Socratic dialogue here, but I really appreciate you contacting us through our Public Insight Network. And I want to let you know, Nick, and the audience know that later on we'll get to what some representatives from major religions say about forgiveness. So thanks, Jay Allen. Our phone number here on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. And today on the exchange, it's our Socrates Exchange. We're examining the question, what is forgiveness? Nick Smith, let's go to Patricia in Nashua. Good morning, Patricia. You're on the air and welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to say that, to me, forgiveness is a process that we go through, whether it's a very short one or a very long one, depending on the level of forgiveness that's required. But I don't think the idea to forgive
forgiveness doesn't it? Patricia, I love how you've described forgiveness as not being so black and white. If that's the case, can I ask you, how do you know when you're done? How do you know if you've actually forgiven someone? If you say you can't sort of identify the moment when it's you flip the switch again and it's you're forgiven, how do you know if you're finished? Seeking recent graduates, mid-career professionals, and retirees. Information sessions throughout New Hampshire now through October. Details at peacecorps.gov/events. And from North Branch Construction Incorporated, proud to support NHPR as an underwriter and as a builder of NHPR's new broadcasting center. Information at northbranch.net. More of our Socrates Exchange series and What is Forgiveness on New Hampshire Public Radio, then attend on the Diane Reen Show. The United States Senate proposes changes to the Financial Rescue Plan. Rancher weather this afternoon, turning partly cloudy, highs today lower 50s north country, mid 60s south, mostly clear for most of the state tonight, clouding up in the north country, lows mid 30s north and mid 40s in the south. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoi. Today, it's our Socrates Exchange, where once a month we examine one question using the Socratic method of asking questions and more questions. This month, we're asking, what is forgiveness? With me in the studio is Nick Smith, Associate Professor of Philosophy at UNH, advisor to UNH's Socratic Society, and Project Advisor to the Socrates Exchange. And Nick, we go now to Patrick Ryan, someone who you know well. He's a senior majoring in philosophy and student director of the Socratic Society, which you advise. Good morning, Patrick Ryan. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Take us down at it, Patrick. Would you? What is forgiveness?
All right, well, first of all, I was looking over the Socrates Exchange website today and looking at the prompts at the top of the page, and one of the things that interested me most was the idea of forgiveness as a virtue. And I think that today, in modern society, at least, virtue has kind of, the idea of virtue has lost some of the sense that it held for the ancient Greeks, and so in my understanding of forgiveness, I'd like to kind of try and reconcile with that ancient Greek understanding of a virtue, which entails two things, and that would be first, that forgiveness is a practice, and secondly, that implicit to that practice is some sort of good. In other words, the practice of forgiveness disposes one towards the accomplishment of some sort of good. And we're not talking, when I'm talking about good in this sense, we're not talking about kind of some sort of reward that would be gained, like if you forgive so-and-so, then they'll come to your birthday party and give you a gift or something. That would be an explicit good that would come from forgiveness. But what I think is more interesting is the implicit good, what you gain by virtue of just doing that act of forgiveness.
This notion of forgiveness is a virtue. Do you think forgiveness is always a virtue? Can you imagine cases where it isn't virtuous to forgive someone, or forgiving someone can actually be maybe immoral or wrong thing to do?
Right, well, I think that's kind of a difficult question that you come down to is in what circumstances, but I think that ultimately, if you do carry this out as a practice that's directed towards, I think it would ultimately be directed kind of towards a sense of human solidarity, that you would, through practicing forgiveness and coming to understand it better, you would be able to discern those situations in which it was appropriate and inappropriate to forgive someone.
When might it be inappropriate? Patrick, when might it be inappropriate to forgive someone?
Right. Well, I think on the one hand, you've got someone who's... I'm of the opinion that it's better to forgive than not to forgive. So I think that you've got to kind of try to extend that sense of forgiveness as best you can. As far as a particular situation when it would be inappropriate to forgive someone, I think that it would be inappropriate to forgive someone who has kind of no acknowledgement of or sense of responsibility or understanding of what they've done to upset someone or prompt someone to need to forgive in the first place.
So people deserve to be forgiven or they don't deserve to be forgiven? So it's not just a matter of, and there's a Christian idea that our previous caller was mentioning that you should forgive everyone no matter what they do, that forgiveness is sort of an inherent necessary virtue in all cases. And now I'm wondering, are you committed to this idea that people have to deserve it? So maybe they need to apologize or have some sense of why they've done wrong? So forgiveness is only deserved, it's not just for everyone?
No, I actually don't think that there is kind of a sense of merit or deserving that goes into it. That's quite as important. What I really think is important is, like I said, by this practice of forgiveness, it's kind of it's really a practice of solidarity, so of kind of reconstituting severed ties, or in many ways, I think it almost is a reverse process of alienation, or a distance has been put between two people. So it's not a question of merit so much of the individual. I think it's a question of the practical possibility of reconstituting those ties. I think there are certain things that the person being forgiven needs to recognize in order for that to be possible.
Well, Patrick, thank you so much for being with us today on the Socrates Exchange.
Thank you very much for having me.
Bye-bye. That's Patrick Ryan. He's a senior majoring in philosophy and student director of the Socratic Society at UNH. I want to share a posting with you, Nick, that reminds me of some of the things Patrick said. This is from Avishai. I think one needs to apologize before being forgiven, but apology isn't enough. Attempts need to be made to compensate the victim for any losses they may have incurred. I think those two are the two major steps to forgiveness, apology and restitution. So again, kind of playing off some of the things that Patrick said. Join us on the Socrates Exchange today. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. And Nick, let's go to Katie next. She's been waiting in Amherst. Hi, Katie. Thanks for hanging on. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thanks so much for having us. Program is terrific. I've been through a couple of difficult situations where forgiveness was necessary, and I've always found that for me to forgive helped me take some control back. A lot of times we're involved with other people, of course, and through various things I found that you can't control what they're going to do, but you can control what you're going to do. So in order to really find some peace in these situations, it's helped me to forgive. And kind of going, it's interesting you talked about cardiac health, and I remember some years ago at a church mission, one of the guests said, when we forgive, we heal that place in our heart where we're keeping the bad feeling. It's like a scar, like a dark place, and when we're able to heal that, then we have our full ability to love the people in our life that we love. So forgiveness is about healing ourselves.
Katie, stay on the line. Nick, go ahead. Katie, when you describe forgiveness as a way of taking control, one of the things that's often most difficult to take control of is our emotions. And emotions seem to be hugely important in how we understand our forgiveness. Were you able to just, was that easy for you to just decide and control your emotions?
It's a time.
It's
other callers have said, it's about a process. And it gets easier each time.
What sorts of things did
did you do to make the process easier? What was helpful to you?
Well, I tried to consider... Well, one thing that's helped me is I kind of step back from the situation and look at myself in the situation, and I think, how would I look from the outside looking in, and what kind of action would I want to take? What, if I observed myself and I said, boy, she's being a jerk, or I say, that's a better way to go. So I kind of about that, how I look to myself, and it, I guess it's kind of that higher road thing you're hoping to do it, but it does take time. And I try to get, it's a visceral feeling. You say, well, this feels better, and I try to go there.
Right, so forgiveness is easier said than done in a way, right? You can find to forgive someone, but sometimes the nagging feelings slip up, you might even feel guilty for having those.
Yeah, so sometimes it's easier to do when the person that you're having conflict with isn't present.
You know, Nick, several people have mentioned the role that faith plays in forgiveness, and this concept of forgiveness does play a key part in many world religions. To find out more, Exchange Executive Producer Keith Teal spoke with representatives of three major faiths here in the Granite State. My name is Rabbi Beth D. Davidson. I am the rabbi at Temple of Yad Sharon in Manchester, New Hampshire, which is a Reform congregation. The Jewish tradition has a number of teachings about forgiveness, many of which are forefront in our minds at the moment as we're entering into the High Holy Day season. Judaism teaches that the word for forgiveness is teshuva. Teshuva comes from the Hebrew root shuv, which means to turn. And so primarily, forgiveness in the Jewish religion is this idea of turning towards people you may have wronged and ultimately towards God. There's some ritual, but the main part of this is that you really have to do what you can to make it right, particularly with the people that you've wronged. So if, for example, you know that you have done something to someone for which you need forgiveness, you are expected to reach out to that person in person, by phone, by letter, I guess these days by email, and to do everything you can to ask that person to forgive you. The Jewish tradition teaches that for the 10 days between Rosh Hashanah, our New Year, until Yom Kippur, that you have that 10 days to make it right with the people. Because the tradition teaches that you are not allowed to approach God for forgiveness on Yom Kippur until you've made it right with people here on earth as well. And there's a very famous quote from the Mishnah, one of our great compilations, that says, for transgressions against God, the Day of Atonement atones, but for transgressions of one human being against another, the Day of Atonement does not atone until they have made peace with one another.
My name is Ted White, and I go by Pastor Ted. And I'm from Scranton, New Hampshire, but I pastor a church in Milford, New Hampshire, New Hope Church, and it's an evangelical free church. Forgiveness within Christianity is different than any other world religion. Basically, it's resting on the foundation of Jesus Christ. When Jesus went to the cross and died on that cross for our sins, he offers forgiveness for everyone who accepts him. And so if a person acknowledges that Jesus Christ died on the cross for their sin, they ask him to come into their life and basically take control, be the captain of their ship, if you will, then he will forgive them. Now, we're called in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32, it says, just as Christ forgave me, I'm to forgive others. I think it's interesting, the Lord's Prayer, in that prayer, it says, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors, or forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us. And so interesting, in that prayer, we're asking God to forgive us just as we forgive somebody else. So if we're not willing to forgive somebody, God's not willing to forgive us. We're called to forgive anyway, basically. Now, that doesn't mean there's not consequences, and that doesn't mean we don't keep people accountable. Peter came and asked Jesus the question, Lord, how many times do I forgive my brother? He said, 7 times 70. Well, that's just a figure of speech. Basically, when a person comes and asks for forgiveness, we're supposed to forgive them any time, but we're also called to forgive our enemies.
My name is Muhammad Hassan. I'm an Arab American Muslim. Forgiveness is one of the most important foundations in Islam because the name of God, Allah, is forgiveness. God is the essence of forgiveness. In Arabic, we have names of Allah, and one of the most important ones is Al-Ghafur. And Al-Ghafur is derived from the verb Ghafara, which literally means to cover, but it also means to excuse, to pardon, and to forgive. So when we respect Allah and we believe in His guidance and follow His guidance, we basically live by His rules, and one of the rules is to be forgiven and to ask for forgiveness. The best model for forgiveness at the human level is the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, who was a very, very forgiving person. I mean, there's a story when he was delivering his message, he went to a city called Taif, and he was going with the intention to teach its people the principles of Islam, and he was very badly treated by the people of the city. And when he left the city wounded and humiliated, God sent an angel to him, and this angel came to him saying, God sent me to destroy the people of the city. But Muhammad prayed to God and asked him to forgive those people because those people did what they do by ignorance. So that tells you a lot about how forgiveness is one of the most important foundations in Islam. Since Islam is part of the monotheistic religions, it's a very important principle that was not only in Islam, but in other religions too.
Some thoughts from people of faith talking about what major religions teach on forgiveness. That piece was produced by Exchange Executive Producer Keith Shields. Today on Exchange with Us, Socrates Exchange, once a month we ponder one question with you by asking more questions that cause us all to examine the way we think. Again, the question we're asking this month, what is forgiveness? With me in studio, Nick Smith, Associate Professor of Philosophy at UNH and Project Advisor to the Socrates Exchange. And Nick, lots and lots of calls. Let's go to Edna next, where Jenny has been waiting. Hi, Jenny, go ahead, you're on the Exchange.
Hi, I'm really enjoying the show today. My comment is that what I've learned, or how I have learned, has aided me in the process of forgiving others, as is being forgiven by others, and leading with forgiveness in others. The other part of that is, with forgiveness, when you receive forgiveness, you receive a mercy. So it creates in me a desire to become merciful.
Jenny, can you say a little bit about when you experienced being forgiven by others, what did that teach you that caused the transformation that allowed you to be a forgiver? What exactly did you learn?
Well, I'm thinking about one big example that I went through. In fact, it was with my folks, and we had a big altercation when I was home, and it had to do with child rearing and stuff. And in that argument with them, in anger, I purposely said mean things and was hurtful. And so, even though I was reacting to the situation, I purposely hurt them and I needed to apologize and ask for their forgiveness. And I sent an email, and in the subject line it said, it happened to be on the first day of spring, so I said the vernal equinox and forgiveness. That's another part of the question of forgiveness. Is it easier to forgive if there's a repentance involved? I think it is easier to forgive when there's repentance involved, but I think, ultimately, if you want to be merciful, you have to learn to forgive in the absence of repentance.
When you forgive others, how important is it to you that they apologize? What do you want them to do in order to earn that forgiveness?
Well, that's what I try to remove from the equation in my effort to become merciful, which I think is part
you're inclined to think that forgiveness is owed to everyone. So this Christian idea that we heard a religious leader speaking of earlier, that just as Jesus forgave everyone, you should also forgive everyone. So there may indeed be some people who, you know, you might not want to forgive them. You can imagine abusive relationships where perhaps it's not the most prudent thing to forgive someone, but you should do it anyway. You can imagine situations where perhaps you shouldn't forgive.
I can imagine not wanting to forgive, but I do think, as a person, in an effort to be merciful and to receive mercy, the obligation will still be on you to forgive.
Jenny, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Again, our number on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Today, it's the Socrates Exchange. The question we're examining with you this hour is, what is forgiveness? The conversation has been going on our website, by the way, for a couple of weeks now. And Nick Smith, before we go to the break, I want to share a comment that came in later, just yesterday, I think, that really got people going on the website. This is from Zake. Forgiveness is not real. You can never truly forgive anyone, and you will never really trust the person again. Although you can still like the person in question, the relationship is always tainted with hatred and doubt. And this comment really got a lot of people responding on our website. You can go to the Socrates Exchange page at nhpr.org and post your comments, or call in this hour, 1-800-892-6477. You're listening to the Socrates Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. Next time on The World, Canada is about to hold its national elections, but it's the race for the White House in Washington that inspires one Canadian singer.
I don't have to be a resident to care about who's president,
but the long arm of his reach is far and wide. Why Canada's Luke Doucette wishes he was American. Next time on The World, today at 3 on NHPR. This is New Hampshire Public Radio. Support comes from your members and from the Community College System of New Hampshire, strengthening the state's healthcare workforce by preparing students for careers in nursing and other healthcare professionals. And Orr & Reno, a law firm of over 30 attorneys representing individuals, businesses, and nonprofits in New Hampshire and beyond. Online at orr-reno.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kinoy. I'm reminded that The Exchange and The Socrates Exchange can now be found on Facebook. So if you're a Facebook member, check out our pages, The Exchange, The Socrates Exchange, and become a fan. It is The Socrates Exchange today, where we are pondering the question, what is forgiveness? With me is Nick Smith, Associate Professor of Philosophy at UNH, advisor to UNH's Socratic Society, and project advisor to us for The Socrates Exchange. And Nick, let's go to Durham next, where Jason is on the line. Hi, Jason, go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm not nearly, I would say, as inflexible as the last posting that you just read. But I do think that the pressure to forgive, the moral tie-in to forgive, can be somewhat, I would say, overrated. Religion sometimes is arrogance masking as humility. I think sometimes forgiveness is maybe denial masking as virtue. And I've learned just listening to these conversations that one of the things towards giving forgiveness or expecting forgiveness is apology and looking to make amends, looking to make restitution. But when those things are not there, I think you forgive and ask forgiveness for things that you can possibly imagine yourself doing or doing by mistake. But those that you can't, I reject the notion that you can't get over it or you can't move on or you can't get through something without having forgiven that person. There was somebody who a while ago did a very bad wrong to me, accused me of something I wasn't doing and decided not to work with me or talk to me anymore. And he never came back and said that he was wrong or asked for forgiveness or whatever. And I just simply, I know this is harsh, disposed of the person. I want nothing to do with that person anymore, and I've moved on. To come to me and pressure me to forgive, and I have to do some other follow through to make my soul feel better, I think is misguided sometimes.
This is really interesting. Thank you. Stay on the line, Jason. Nick, go ahead. Jason, you seem to have a kind of skepticism that I find very compelling with regard to the idea that forgiveness is way too simplistic. You sound like you think forgiveness is almost a morally bad concept that does damage to our relationships and our psychology. I mean, can you talk a little about what do you think are the worst features of forgiveness? Why should we maybe second guess whether forgiveness is so essential in the Christian tradition? It's so ultimately important and evident in other religious traditions. Why do you want to resist that? Is there any good come from abandoning forgiveness and just getting rid of the moral concept?
I wouldn't go that far. To me, I think the issue of forgiveness and the appropriateness of forgiveness, I'm not against forgiveness by any means. As a matter of fact, I've needed it from time to time. But to me, I'm going to the 10,000 foot view where there's this pressure to forgive, that the outside forces, be they religious or whatever, that set the ability to forgive as somehow intrinsic with goodness and virtue. That if somebody does something to me, is non-repentant, and I can't imagine ever doing that to somebody. That just isn't part of my moral fiber. I don't want to feel the pressure of my spiritual advisor, my pastor, or anybody who claims to have some sort of moral wisdom that I must forgive or else somehow I am damaged.
Excuse me for jumping in here, but you and Nick are doing a great job picking away at this. A posting on our website, again, the Socrates Exchange site, from Rich said, "Forgiveness is a gift to yourself. An inability to forgive and forget condemns one to being a prisoner of the past. One can never enjoy true mental health without the ability to forgive." What do you think?
Dead wrong. If somebody comes to me with that kind of servitude, it makes me bristle and come back with maybe more servitude than I should. But like I said, there are many people for whom I've forgiven, and there's many people for whom I have needed and asked for forgiveness. But I think it's a personal call that doesn't necessarily reflect on the person who does it. The one individual who I've just never been able to forgive and has never asked for forgiveness. I'm talking about it now, but day to day, I've moved on. It hasn't affected my relationships with other people. I think sometimes it's, like I said, it tends to be, from those casting the desire for somebody to forgive from the outside, almost denial masking as a virtue.
Well, Jason, this is great. Thank you so much. I think you posted too on the site, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
You did? Okay, there was
I actually just caught this morning.
Okay, there was another, that's a coincidence. There was another Jason who posted and said kind of a lot of the same things you said. So, hey, I really appreciate you coming.
I need something in the name.
Bye-bye, Jason. Our number 1-800-892-6477. It's the Socrates Exchange today, where we are pondering the question, what is forgiveness? Let's go on, Nick, to Milford next, where Ruth Ann has been hanging on. Ruth Ann, go ahead.
Well, I kind of agree with the previous caller in some ways. My concern is, when does forgiveness enable the person to just continue the behavior?
What do you think, Ruth Ann?
I think for some people it does. I think some people just apologizing and asking forgiveness is just a routine, you know, response to their bad behavior, and then they continue to behave badly.
Well, in the problem that you describe, forgiving typically is a kind of vice rather than a virtue?
No, I don't consider forgiveness a vice. I'm just saying not all people deserve forgiveness.
Well, if you forgive someone who doesn't deserve it, maybe do you think that might make you actually complicit with the wrongdoing? So say if you were to forgive an adulterer too quickly before they reformed, do you think that actually makes you complicit in the behavior? So you're sort of allowing it by, you know, letting them off the hook too easily?
I think yes. If that's our definition of enabling, is complicit, then yes, I
then has to deserve forgiveness before we should grant it? Is that what you mean?
I think when someone apologizes, there has to be a sincere apology with the idea that the person's not going to do that behavior again. I think people apologize very shallowly. They have no intention of not doing the behavior again. They just want to sort of get out of the situation at that time.
Let me ask you one more question. If someone gives you what you call a good apology, then do you think it's, can they then say that you owe them forgiveness? Like, I'll give me an apology. Come on with forgiveness already. Right? You owe me forgiveness now without giving me a proper apology. Do you think it's kind of like a little autonomy like that? Like, if I give you an apology, you then owe me forgiveness?
No, it's a sincere apology, not a good apology. I think there's a difference. I think a sincere apology is someone who inadvertently made a mistake, wronged you in some way, and their apology is indication that they don't intend to do that again.
Well, Ruthann, thank you so much. Hope you join us next month for the Socrates Exchange.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
And to Andover next, where Don is on the line. Hi, Don, go ahead, you're on the Socrates Exchange.
Good morning, And here we are again. I'm talking about forgiveness that comes with time and maturity. I'm in my 80th year of life, and you don't need to be on site to forgive. You can forgive something that occurred years ago and with time and understanding. For instance, many of my forgiveness involves anti-Semitism. And for instance, I as a college freshman, a fellow came up to me and bumped me and said, Jew. I never forgave him for many years, but I came to understand where he came from. His family was in the textile business. They were the Stevens textile business. My family was in the garment industry. And I understood where he came from. My family were immigrants, and they were dealing with pennies and trying to bargain down all the time. And I understand that from his patrician he was looking down at me.
Don, stay on the line with us, please. This is really interesting. You first, Nick Smith, and I have a question for Don, too. Don, since you mentioned your experiences of Semitism, the question often comes up whether some events, the most common example is the Holocaust, are unforgivable. What do you make of that notion of something being unforgivable, and how would you read the Holocaust in that context, if I can ask you that question?
Well, I can give you an example. I was an intern, and there was a German resident, and a friend of mine said, you know, he really wants to be friendly with you, and I said, I can't be friendly with him. And now, years later, I sincerely regret that.
Don, can I ask you a question since you said you were 80, and congratulations for reaching that age.
Okay.
Do you think our feelings of forgiveness change as we age? And our ability to forgive, does it change as we age?
Well, I've been to Germany. The first time I went to Germany, we were going skiing, and my friends were all dressed casually, and I said, I'm not going to Germany dressed casually. And I dressed up and went into Germany well-dressed to go skiing. And the next time I came into Germany, I came on a ferry into Germany, and there was a man there with a Doberman pincher and a Tyrolean hat. And when we went into Germany, they said, get out of the car, and we had to step on a rug with gas to decontaminate our shoes. And I said, oh, next is a gas chamber.
Mm.
But I've been to Germany enough and have German friends, and Germany has made enough reparations. And I know many of the German people have changed their attitude. And I think there's been much progress in that strategy.
Well, Don, thank you so much. Lots of rich veins to tap there. Appreciate your call. Thank you.
Thank you.
And to Manchester next, Don Ray is on the Socrates Exchange. Hi, Don Ray, go ahead.
Hi.
Go ahead, Don
Ray. Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Go ahead.
Forgiveness, I believe, is when you give it, it sets you free to be able to love that person again. For many years, I hated my parents, and even after I was married, I still hated them. And one day, I just woke up and I decided I was going to make a list of everything that hurt me about them, and I tore it up, and I just said, I forgive you, Mom and Dad. And it was like thousands of millions of bricks just fell off my shoulders.
Wow.
And it was like freedom of forgiveness, and I said, why didn't I do this before? How come it took me so many years? Now, it opened the door for me to be able to love that person, love my parents, or anybody else that I couldn't forgive.
Then
for the first time, I was able to love.
Can I ask you, how do you define forgiveness? Since you seem like you have this experience, or you do, and some others, where you're really able to make a choice, follow through on it, and forgive. What do you mean by forgiveness, given we'd like to hear your advice on how it worked out for you?
Well, it doesn't matter what they did. I just forgive them and love them.
So forgiveness for you is synonymous with loving?
Yes.
Interesting.
Because when you forgive, it sets you free. Before, when you couldn't forgive that person, you could not really love that person because you hated that person.
Well, why do you think that works for you, Donna Raymond? It doesn't work for somebody else.
Well, I think love covers a multitude of sins, and perfect love casts out fear. And we may not love what they do, but that doesn't mean that we can't still love them.
Okay. Donna, thank you so much. We'll end on that note with you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Nick, you've been holding Socratic discussions with your students at UNH for a while. When you talk about forgiveness with them, what sorts of issues have come up? Similar to what we heard today?
They're similar. It's a complicated stew of problems, in part because we're inheriting all these religious notions of forgiveness, and those are all related to our religious notions of repentance. So we have this whole cultural stew of these traditions that we're now inheriting, that we may not even believe in anymore, but it's part of the cultural soup. And then thinking about, where do our core moral values come from? How do we apologize for them? Are we required to give forgiveness? Can forgiveness actually be a vice? There's increasing amount of people who argue that forgiving too quickly is one of the primary problems with the world, because we don't take wrong seriously enough, and we let things slide, rather than putting our foot down and drawing a line in the sand and requiring people to really change their behavior. So forgiveness, like apologies, has become too flippant, is one of the words we often find, even though, in part of that is coming from the sense that real forgiveness, that the big metaphysical forgiveness, has to do with these religious notions.
Interesting, too, we heard from a lot of people, like Donna Ray, forgiveness sets you free, the benefits of it, how hard or easy it is, but also some skepticism that there has to be something on the other end, in order to forgive the wronger or the person who's done the wrong, has to kind of deserve that forgiveness. We heard that from some people, too.
Right, there's that contrast and the tension between forgiveness as a kind of therapy, makes you feel better, improves your heart, reduces your stress, versus forgiveness as this absolute sort of moral boundary that has to be taken very rigorously.
And Nick, real quickly, we're going to meet again next month on October 28th for the next Socrates Exchange. Prime the pump a little, Nick. Tell us what we'll be pondering.
Well, we're going to talk about the relationship between, we often have a sense that money is important. We often spend a lot of time trying to make money, pursue money. Many people's notion of success is most closely entwined with how much money they make. But a lot of actual social scientific research tells us that money doesn't really have much to do with our happiness, which is surprising a lot of people. But if you make a very modest living, your happiness potential kind of caps out. It seems that happiness has a lot to do with all sorts of other things. So we're going to take a honest look. Does money matter to happiness? Does money matter for a good life? What's the relationship between money and happiness?
Is there a relationship between money, happiness, and a good life? We'll ponder that next time. Nick, thank you so much. Appreciate you coming in today.
My
we'll see you in October. And a reminder that our conversation continues today on what is forgiveness online. Post your comments, respond to letters, go to the exchange page at nhbr.org, and then click on the Socrates Exchange. And for the next hour to Socratic Dialogue. Tell us about it. We'll post the information again at nhpr.org. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The producer is Dan Ackley. The engineer is Dan Colton. Our volunteers